5. The Assignment. Alone in the dining room at the Langham Hotel, Modo finished his breakfast of cheese scones and apples, wiped his lips with a napkin, and let out a satisfied huff. He was wearing his Mr. Dawkins face again, a face that was handsome enough, but not overly so. No sense attracting unwanted attention. This was the life. It already felt as though years had passed since he'd last seen Ravenscroft, the house in the country where he'd been raised from a toddler until he was a young man. Mr. Socrates had told him he was likely 14 now, because he had rescued him during what appeared to be Modo's first year of life. But no one could be certain. He had never celebrated a birthday. Maybe he was 15. Time was always playing games with him. The years in Ravenscroft sometimes seemed so short because every memory he had of his early life had taken place in the same three rooms. He'd spent all that time indoors, reading history, learning how to change his shape, training with Tharper, and working on his acting skills with his governess, Mrs. Finchley. Only 8 months ago, Mr. Socrates had taken him from Ravenscroft and left him in London to fend for himself. He did like the Langham. It was so much better than his first rat-infested room at Seven Dials. And, after all, Octavia had stayed here. It was the place they'd first met face to face. That made him laugh. Well, it wasn't this face she'd seen, but another he called the Knight. Had Mr. Socrates sent her somewhere else? She could be in Wales, for all he knew. Or France? That would be disconcerting. Surely Mr. Socrates wouldn't send a girl out of the country. He feared he might never see her again. He pushed away from the table and went up to room 327, where he found a note left under the door. Report to Victor House at once. You no longer need the room or your accoutrements. They will be handled by my staff. Another assignment already? It had only been 2 days since his last visit to Victor House. Modo burned the note in the sink and undressed. His dining suit had been specially tailored by Norton and Sons on Savile Row, and he hoped he would be able to wear it again soon. Mr. Socrates would store it at one of his many properties. Modo pulled on cheaper clothes and a dark jacket and let his features slip away, his face changing to its real shape, his hump rising on his back. There was no point in retaining this shape any longer. Mr. Socrates would only ask him to revert to his normal appearance once he arrived. Modo chose a flesh-coloured mask. No one but Tharper and Mr. Socrates were supposed to see his actual face. Grabbing a haversack, Modo took one last look at his room, with its green satin curtains, red bedspread, and brass gas lamps. He'd been here for several weeks before the French embassy assignment, resting and preparing with all the comforts. Hot and cold running water. Silk bathrobe. Now he would leave all that behind. He walked down the stairs, receiving odd looks from the very staff who had nodded politely to him earlier. He found the mask to be a useful weapon. He could glare through the eyeholes and silence anyone who had too many questions. Soon a cab left him in front of Victor House. Just as Modo was lifting his hand to knock, Tharper opened the door, then led him to the main room. Mr. Socrates was sitting at the library table with Octavia Milkweed. Modo drew in a long breath, and his hand automatically flew up to his mask to be sure it was in place. It had been nearly 2 months since he'd last set eyes upon her, and now he couldn't stop looking. She had on a green satin dress, her hair tied up under a green bonnet, and she wore white gloves. He straightened his back as much as possible, his twisted spine complaining. "Ah, Modo, please join us for tea," Mr. Socrates said. "You remember Octavia, I presume?" "Of course. Good morning to you, Miss Milkweed." He bowed slightly, intending to look princely. She gave him a mischievous smile. "Good morning, Modo. You haven't changed a bit in the last while. In fact, you don't look a day over 12. "What?" Modo sat awkwardly on a chair. Something about her put him off balance. "I'm older than that." "Ah, yes, so you say. I see you are masked, yet again. Playing a villain in a play?" "Yes," he said, searching for a clever counterquip. Nothing. He couldn't think of the name of a single drama. "Yes, I am playing a villain." As though it were the end of a boxing match, Mr. Socrates rang a small dinner bell. "Tea will be right up," he said, a hint of a smile on his face. Octavia looked quite full of herself. The last time Modo had seen her, he'd been nearly certain she was going to confess that she cared deeply for him, or at least for his visage of the day. If he were to show her his real face, she would be disgusted. Cook entered, holding a tray of sweet biscuits and tea. He was a small, barrel-chested man, his face a mass of scars. He poured tea and retreated to the kitchen. "It's a fine blend of black tea flavored with bergamot oil," Mr. Socrates said. "My own recipe, a secret that will go to the grave with me." It was tricky for Modo to drink with his mask on, but he'd done it often enough that now he expertly dipped his head, lifted the mask with his left hand, and sipped. "It does taste delicious, sir. We'll raise a cup in your honour when you die." Mr. Socrates smiled. Modo was pleased by his master's reaction, and even more pleased to see that his teasing had brought a smile to Octavia's lips. He took a satisfied sip of tea and swished it about playfully. Mr. Socrates held his teacup perfectly still. "I suppose you are wondering why I have asked you here." He took a slow sip. "My intention is for you two to marry." Modo spurted his tea back into his cup. Octavia said, "Each other." "For espionage purposes only, of course." "I have no desire to be married again," Octavia said indignantly, giving Mr. Socrates a cool stare. "I'm sure you'll remember that my last husband died."
"Pardon me?" exclaimed Modo.
"Yes," Mr. Socrates said. "I haven't forgotten that, and I understand your hesitance. Perhaps you'll have better luck this time. I'm certain that Modo hopes so for his own sake. You two will travel to New York, and you must keep up appearances. After all, unmarried men and women do not travel together without a chaperone." He sipped his tea. "I already have tickets on the steamship Abyssinia, departing this afternoon. It's a 12-day trip, and you'll have a stateroom and study. You'll take on the roles of Mr. and Mrs. Walkin. I have passports, papers, and money for you. Modo, because your disguises last only for a few hours at a time, Octavia will fetch your food."
"I look forward to it, sir,"
Modo blurted out happily, while Octavia snapped,
"I don't fetch."
"My error," Mr. Socrates said. "I used the wrong word. Octavia will be kind enough to bring food to the room, because you shall be playing the part of a somewhat ill man. That will allow you to remain in your cabin most hours." Modo still couldn't get his mind around it. He would be on the ocean, going to America.
With Octavia.
"I've never been on the ocean before," he said. "Not entirely true, Modo," Mr. Socrates said. "You did cross the channel as a child."
"I did?"
Modo gripped his teaspoon a little tighter. His only childhood memories were of Ravenscroft.
"When?"
"That's not important now."
"Who are we supposed to be meeting?"
Octavia asked.
"Ah, you always have your mind on the task, Octavia. Good. Good.
Mr. Weil, who has been an employee of mine for many years. I was expecting communication from him, but it hasn't arrived. You shall go and find out what the delay is. I've prepared a dossier, which you will memorize, of course." He handed a paper to Octavia, who looked it over quickly and tossed it to Modo. "You have it memorized already?" he asked.
"Of course."
Modo stared at it a bit longer, then set the paper down. "And your wedding rings?" Mr. Socrates opened a small envelope and handed one ring to each of them. Modo's gold band was a little loose.
"Does it do anything?" Modo asked.
"The ring?"
"Yes. If you fall in the water, it will expand into a cork float."
"Truly?" Modo said. Octavia rolled her eyes. Modo blushed.
"Ah, you were joking."
Mr. Socrates actually grinned. Modo ran his fingers over the gold ring.
"Married."
He nearly laughed out loud. Then it dawned on him. He would be sharing a room with Octavia. He began to sweat profusely. Mr. Socrates placed a photograph on the table. Modo leaned forward to more closely inspect the grainy image of a man in a French military uniform, a woman and a young girl beside them. The woman was Japanese and wore a kimono. The girl's face was circled, and Modo could clearly see that she must be their daughter, as she had both the determined look of the man and the beauty and colouring of the woman. At the bottom was written 1869, age 14, Hakodate, Japan. This is the Brunette family. Captain Alphonse Brunette died of wounds sustained during the Boshin War. His only daughter was Colette Brunette. She is 18 now and works as a spy for the French government. She is highly regarded despite her youth, and she has risen to the top of the ranks. What does she have to do with our assignment? Modo asked. Patience, Modo, I'm coming to that. Miss Brunette is searching for something called the Ictinio. Since the French have given her the job of finding it, that would strongly indicate it's their top priority. I assume it's important to us, too, Octavia said. Yes, the French are allies, but we cannot allow them to gain any advantage over us, especially on the seas. Octavia adjusted a lock of her hair. In other words, you want to gather up all the toys before the French have a chance to play with them. Ah, such cheekiness. Mr. Socrates no longer seemed amused. These toys are what decide the fate of the empire. He looked at Modo. Can you guess what the name Ictinio means? It's Greek, correct? Yes, but what does it mean? Well, an ichthus is a fish. Neo is new, so it's a new fish. Yes, perhaps that's what it means. The root of the second word could be naus, or ship. So it may mean fish ship, or a fish as big as a ship, a blunt translation. There are rumours of a sea monster. A sea monster? Modo said. A whale, like Moby Dick? Or is it more like the Kraken? Mrs. Finchley allowed you to read too many flights of fancy, Mr. Socrates said sadly. The sense of shame made Modo shrink inside. But they were good stories, he wanted to say. He couldn't imagine his childhood, or his life now, without books. Every line of Coleridge was stamped in his memory. In any case, Mr. Socrates went on, I doubt that Miss Brunette is pursuing an actual sea monster, though I admit one can never be certain what the depths of the ocean will produce. I have myself seen squids the length of a ship, whales as large as an island. One theory from other members of the association is that they have replaced the ivory tusks of narwhals with metal ones and trained them to sink ships. Is that possible? Octavia asked, her eyes large and distractingly beautiful. Modo bit his lip, trying to keep his mind on their task. Mr. Socrates nodded. A few months ago I would have said no, but our encounter with the Clockwork Guild has opened my eyes. After all, they melded flesh and metal in ways beyond human comprehension. Modo swallowed. He didn't like to think about the Clockwork Guild. They had nearly destroyed the Houses of Parliament, and worse, had attempted to kill him several times in the space of a few short hours. Just the thought of Miss Hackendottir and her metal hand was enough to make him shudder. She lived on in his nightmares. More than once he had woken up in a cold sweat from a dream in which she had plucked out one of his eyes with her sharpened metal nails. Attaching metal spears to whales sounds like something they would do. Octavia was tapping her fingers on the table. After all, those hounds of theirs were half iron, half flesh. That idea would certainly be in keeping with what we know of them. I'd be quite happy never to have to set eyes on one of those hounds again. Modo said. Don't be frightened, Modo, Octavia said. I'll protect you. I'm not frightened. I was only stating a fact. There's no indication that the Clockwork Guild is involved, Mr. Socrates said. The Guild is, as we say in the business, sleeping. They've disappeared down the rabbit hole. But one can never be too cautious. In the meantime, we will act on what we know. The papers Modo retrieved from the embassy include the last transmission from Brunette, which I have deciphered to mean that a ship was sent for her to command. We need to know where she went. And will Agent Weil have the answer to this question? Octavia asked. He should have reported in by now. You, Modo, must discover his whereabouts.
Octavia shall assist you.
I'll lead the investigation, you mean?
Octavia said. Mr. Socrates shook his head. Modo will take point. You will work together. If you are not able to make contact with Weil, then it will be your mission to pursue Colette Brunette and discover the story behind the Ictinio. We must either have that technology or destroy it.
Destroy it? Modo asked.
Yes. I cannot overstate this. Our nation is built on sea power. We must control the seas. Modo and Octavia, this is not a small assignment. You will be the eyes and the ears of the Empire.
Me papers are my own,
Octavia said, with the accent from her pickpocket days. This is no joke. Mr. Socrates raised his voice ever so slightly, but the change made Modo sit up straight. Octavia, too. I don't send you on this assignment lightly. I have arranged for clothing for you. All is packed in the next room. And there is one final thing. He opened a box on the table.
This.
He took out a leather item from which hung a safety chain.
A wallet?
Asked Modo. Open it, Mr. Socrates said. When Modo did so, he found that the top half of the wallet encased a square mechanical device. The change pouch of the wallet held an electric cell.
What is it?
A wireless telegraph,
Octavia said. She smiled at Modo's surprise that she should recognize it.
I've seen one before, but this one is amazingly small.
You are very observant, Octavia, said Mr. Socrates. That's exactly what it is.
But how does it work?
Modo asked.
How far will the messages travel?
Alas, the distance isn't great. You must be close to a telegraph line. It will work, occasionally, on the ocean. You'll be able to communicate through the transatlantic cables. You keep it, Modo, since the husband always carries the wallet. Secure it in a safe place on your person.
I shall.
And I also have this. From the same box, Mr. Socrates took out what looked like black netting, but when he shook the fabric, two eye-holes appeared in it. A mask. Much easier to transport than your papier-mâché ones. You can keep it in your pocket, and it will stretch over your face, concealing any shape.
That is excellent, sir.
Modo folded the mask carefully, surprised by the suppleness of the material. Now you must go and make yourselves ready. A cab is waiting to take you to the train to Liverpool. At 2 o'clock this afternoon, your ship departs.